Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. It is an emergency podcast. I am joined by Carter Rodriguez. Man, it feels like it's been way too long. How's it going, buddy?
Fire up the alarm bells, my friend. We are back. Yeah, it's been a minute. We were both, for various reasons, pretty unreliable for the last month or so. And then you recorded a podcast with Zavak that got lost. So ultimately, it's like we never left you. I would like to say.
I have to say, Kevin, David. Yeah. David was phenomenal on the podcast, and I do feel genuinely bad that fell apart.
Luckily, he's never going to listen to this because he doesn't listen to podcasts.
That's very much true. But we are back, which is great, and we have some new news too. The Chase Down podcast is now being brought to you by Blue Wire. We're very, very excited to partner with the Blue Wire. A lot of exciting things coming down the line. From a logistics standpoint, it isn't going to change a whole lot. You're still going to be able to find us on the same feed, but we got merchandising things coming down the line. It also means that the Patreon page is no longer going to be up as... Well, we don't really need the support for our hosting costs, so it just seemed a little wrong to keep that going.
Yeah, really excited to join the Blue Wire Network. They've got a lot of great pods coming. Our friends and probably your foes, Sam and Andy, will also be joining up along with a lot of pods across multiple different sports. So keep an eye out for all that Blue Wire programming. But yeah, as far as we go, we are not going to change at all because we're not capable.
Of course. I mean, change is scary for me, and it's something that I just don't want to go through in any aspect of my life. But change is still the topic of the day with the Cleveland Cavaliers. We are recording this after Media Day, the first one in 4 years without LeBron James. A little bit weird. Little bit weird to see most of the familiar faces back, just with a dramatically different set of expectations.
Early takeaway, I'll say this much. That thing moved a hell of a lot faster when you didn't have LeBron up there for 90 straight minutes.
Actually, I don't want to really dive into the Lakers media day in any way, shape, or form. But I was getting some writing done, and I had it on NBA TV. And LeBron talked for like 12 minutes, and then it cut back to the NBA TV studios after he left. And they were laughing. They're like, well, we were anticipating about 45 minutes to an hour of LeBron, but apparently he doesn't have that a whole lot to say. And David
Griffin... Well, when you have six video shoots to get to, you know, you're going to have to abridge your media day coverage. And, you know, I think... Once again, we're just kind of seeing where LeBron's focus is.
Absolutely, absolutely. Just a scathing indictment of LeBron. But
let's just say he gave Bugs Bunny more than 12 minutes.
Oh, I'd give Lola more than 12 minutes, but Jesus. Moving on. Anyways, Cavs Media Day. We'll start things off talking about Tyronn Lue, who has been put in the uncomfortable position of trying to sell the season. A whole lot of quotes that you could kind of feel a little bit of the pain behind those eyes and in his voice when he was talking about, well, we haven't been beaten yet, so we're still kind of defending our
titles. There's only one cure for that kind of pain behind his eyes.
What's that?
Weed. Yeah, I actually think you can almost take Media Day and like split it between bright-eyed and enthusiastic young people and their miserable fucking older counterparts.
Okay, like, that's not a bad idea. So let's kind of draw the line. Tyronn Lue is falling firmly on the "wow, we're going through this again" side of the line. Kyle Korver, I think you had mentioned that.
Holy crap! Did you get a chance to listen to Kyle Korver?
I just saw the quotes. I didn't really listen to him.
Tone was like I clearly considered retirement, but I'm coming back because I don't know. I'm getting paid. I probably should.
I'm probably going to get traded at some point here.
I might get traded to a good team, and you know I'm a good pro. But it was like there was zero enthusiasm. Like someone was talking to him. I think there was a question about like play style without LeBron, and he's like, yeah, you're going to have to play the right way or it's probably going to get real ugly. Like, it was like, oh my It's just funny, like, the people who know what's coming and the people who don't was like, so Korver definitely was that on that end. Lou was funny because, like, partly he's defiant. So part of him is defiant, which was the, well, last I checked, we haven't lost the Eastern Conference yet.
That's always kind of the wall that he puts up with the media as well. Yeah,
because he doesn't like the media. And then you also had this, like, well, I have to toe the company line. So it's like, yeah, Dan Gilbert is amazing, and he spends money, and we're gonna compete. And then you have, like, the quiet expectation setting, which yielded my favorite line of the entire media day, which is, we don't have wins and losses. We have wins and lessons.
I love it, man. I love it. And before we get on to the enthusiastic young guys, we should probably talk a little bit about the team being committed to winning and wanting to trade for Jimmy Butler. We were kind of hoping
we buried the lead there.
Yeah, we definitely did. But, I mean, part of me was hoping that this would be resolved already at this point, that he would have been sent to one place or another. But we have kind of still the unknown with Jimmy Butler. And I think it's fair to say that there's almost no chance he actually ends up on the Cavs. I just don't see a deal working out. But what's your thoughts on the team even being interested in him in the first place?
I mean, I guess, like, from the perspective of, like, hey, they're trying to win, so I guess leave no stone unturned. But, like, I think it's really hard to, like, know how you feel about any of that unless you have, like, any idea about any principal parts being involved. Like, I think if you're giving up anyone you care about in the future for Jimmy Butler, you're probably an idiot because he's not going to stay.
Well, where do you draw the line? Like, what is the most attractive asset that you'd be willing to give up?
Maybe, like, Nance?
That's where I would draw the line as well. Yeah.
Like, that's not that good of an offer. And I'm not really trying to give up a lot of future firsts because he's going to leave unless somehow you get him, pitch him on a Kyrie return or something, like, really convoluted. And, like, here's the thing. Outside of the guy being born in Cleveland or the immediate area, guys don't really hatch plots to come here. You know, like, it's not like a big conspiracy thing.
They don't need to hatch the plot. You just got to get him there, and then
they would just go to New York where they want to go.
Well,
like, it just doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. So, like, yeah, it'd be nice from the perspective of, like, the Cavs would be a pretty no doubt playoff team if they somehow swung for the
Lakers. That's my take.
You're too low on the Lakers. That is my opinion.
That's fair.
I think your saltiness is speaking for you. It's funny to think about it, so it's easier to lean into it.
And also, the great thing about that, too, is because Butler isn't going to end up on the Cavs, there's no way for me to be proven wrong. And that's really my sweet spot, when you can throw something out there and there's no way it's going to be backed up one way or another.
Can I briefly say something about the Lakers, even though I know you didn't really want to talk about them that much?
Okay.
It is pretty rich, coming from Cavs fans, to say that knucklehead role players won't be able to help a LeBron James-led team.
So, here's the thing about that.
I know their fit was better, but, like...
And they have been good in the last, like, 4 years, which hasn't been the case with the Lakers. And the other problem is those guys need to be, like, core pieces because they really don't have any of that established. And it sounds like Rondo's already starting over Lonzo. And, like, those guys need to be good, and they just haven't been. But I don't want to talk about the Lakers.
Yeah, sorry.
My thing with the Jimmy Butler thing is I think it shows a commitment from the Cavs that they're going to explore any option to try and win. Obviously, if you do get Butler somehow, one, you'd have to be relying on the Wolves to be stupid, which isn't always a bad plan.
Yeah, I was about to say, there's like one owner in the whole NBA that Dan Gilbert could probably get one over.
Yeah.
It's probably Glenn Taylor.
Yeah. I mean, the only opportunity the Wolves really had to get one over on the Cavs was when they wanted to trade Kyrie for Wiggins, and the Wolves didn't want to do that. So that was fantastic. The Love trade certainly worked out pretty well. So if you're making an argument for what the Cavs can trade for Butler, I don't think you can make a realistic best pitch that makes a ton of sense that wouldn't be beat by other teams, but that might still be good enough to get it done just because you're factoring in it being the Wolves. But there really is no set blueprint on how to build a winning team in the NBA. You look at every single champion, it's always some combination of luck, a few bounces going one way or another with free agents or late draft picks or whatever the case may be. So if you could theoretically get Butler, you already have Love. I'm assuming you're not trading Sexton and Jetty in that type of a deal. So obviously I'm already like stretching this a lot that the Cavs aren't really giving up a lot and they're getting Butler. But if you can get into that situation, all of a sudden you can make a realistic pitch for free agents. And we've seen market doesn't matter as much when you have the players there. Again, I don't think that's what's going to happen, but I think we can count on Gilbert trying to expedite whatever rebuild ends up happening this year, whether it be taking advantage of a disgruntled star and getting them on the cheap, or if it's a slow start or a slower start that he wants, or a mediocre start. I think you see the team tear things down really quickly. So I just think that they're not going to be satisfied with just being a middle-of-the-pack team, and my takeaway is that they're going to explore every avenue possible to make things better quicker.
Yeah, you know, and I said this, and, you know, we can actually take this back to the Tyronn Lue comments at Media Day today from the perspective of, listen, you know, I know there's going to be a lot of hand-wringing about, oh, they're trying to win and really they should be trying to tank. And I've kind of been beating this drum quite a bit. Like, you guys don't remember how little fun it is to watch a team that's tanking. And, you know, the ninth pick or the eighth pick is probably not going to make or break this franchise.
Wow. Already counting out Sexton. You were just so pessimistic.
Stop it. and I don't know, man. Like, I'm cool with them trying to win as long as they're not being stupid about it, you know? Mm-hmm. And something else that when I was writing, I mentioned the thing that David Zavak said, and it really is just stuck in my craw for whatever reason. And it was, the Cavs at some point are going to have to develop a positive identity that does not involve LeBron James, because Gilbert was sort of their de facto leader until Kyrie kind of became the guy, but he wasn't really ready to do it. And then LeBron came back, and like, you even hear it, like, and we've even joked about it plenty of times, like, oh, LeBron's going to come back for that final victory lap. And it's like, that's great, but that needs to be like a bonus, not like a franchise defining thing.
Because, right. Yeah. That can't be what you're banking on, because I don't think he can drag, as you know, I'm low on the Lakers roster and what he can do with it. I don't think in 4 years he's going to be able to drag an even lesser team to what fans want.
In this 4 years, the Cavs will probably be title contenders again, but that's a little confusing from you, Mr. Pessimist. It's fine. Yeah, I don't know, man. It, from that perspective, you know, it's like, I just want them to make good, smart decisions. And I don't really care what route they take as long as they're trending positively, if that makes sense. Like, you know what, if they did decide to tank, you know, I'm not going to be throwing a fit about it. You know, if the first half of the season doesn't go well and they start trading vets, you know, that's fine. But yeah, really, I just want them to be a well-run organization. And like, until the, and if that's the, as long as they get to that baseline, then I think I'm going to be pretty pleased, I think.
Yeah. Like, from an intellectual standpoint, I think that what I'd like to see happen is the vets get moved, you manage Love's minutes, and I've said this a million times before, but just try to do a one-year quick reset where you get another high pick, and then you use whatever cap space you have to sign good role players around Love, Jetty, Nance, Sexton, and hopefully Rodney Hood. Hopefully he blossoms, because his upside, if that ends up working out, would be tremendous for this team. But at the same time, once the games start, if this team is winning more than we expect, if you have like an Indiana Pacers type season here, where a team just completely outperforms their expectations after losing a star player, I'm going to be all for it. Like, I'm going to try to enjoy it as much as humanly possible, and I'm just going to kind of throw all the hypotheticals with this team out the window. Like, I'd want to see this team play good basketball, and if they're ahead of schedule, that would be great. I don't necessarily believe that that's the case, but I don't think it's outside the realm of possibilities when you look at this Eastern Conference.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I'm on team. I don't expect this team to be very good.
Yes.
But you know what? Like that. But I'm happy to be wrong. You know, like I think there is a world. When I say that, it's not that I don't see a roadmap for it working. I just see a good roadmap for it not working right now. You know, I would have been on team. The Pacers won't be very good. So what the fuck do I know? Or anyone? Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, I think if you're looking for the right attitude from this Cavs team, I do want them to compete. I want them to want to learn. And that is why I am a little concerned by the guys that didn't seem so thrilled to be there today. I don't know if you remember this. I think it was on our last podcast we did before we took our little unintentional break. I kind of talked about how I felt like Tyronn Lue and the guys were just going to have like just a hangover from 4 straight finals berths. Right. And then all of a sudden playing to get into the playoffs, like all of a sudden playing for a 7 seed or an 8 now, seed. I just think that's hard on your brain. And I think, you know, not to get too psychoanalytical here, but I think we kind of saw that with these guys with a subset of the team. You know, I think, you know, Jetty, bless his heart, looked thrilled to be there. I think Sexton seems pretty excited. But these vets, you know, Korver, you know, Lou, even Thompson, it's like...
Well, I didn't think what I was about to say is how many of these guys actually were giving off that vibe? Like, Lou is always going to be that way with the media. And compared to last season, like, I think last season took a lot of life out of him. He looks refreshed compared to that. But like Thompson, I thought it was encouraging. He was talking about being 100% healthy and he seemed, kind of enthused by that and excited for the challenge of being counted out. And when you look at this time last year, when he was talking about how he wasn't sure if he's ever going to be able to get 100% again, we saw, or at least I saw when he was playing with Team Canada, he was running around and moving like Tristan Thompson again. And he said that he's gone back to 100% health, which whether it's with this team or on the trade market, Thompson playing like he's capable of it, that's going to help things out a whole heck of a lot. So I don't necessarily know how many guys that this team needs to be good looked kind of dejected today at media day. Like I don't think Kyle Korver being that way is necessarily that big a deal.
He's going to still do his job.
Yeah, like, he's still going to do his job. And Tristan Thompson, I think he looked more enthused than I would have expected out of him. Like that's a guy that you worry about just because his productiveness is so reliant on his energy. Kevin Love seemed enthusiastic. He was talking about putting up gaudy numbers again and how he's worked on his game in the summer. The guys were crediting Love for kind of following in LeBron's footsteps and holding training camp before camp and really helping the team bond. Channing Frye is just always enthusiastic. He snagged LeBron's locker.
I get your point. And mm-hmm. I also think the other concern is like the Cavs kind of have too many guys right now.
They do. Absolutely.
And it's an interesting question of like, so they have all these vets that, you know, ostensibly you're going to ask a lot out of if you're going to try to be a winning team, guys like Thompson, guys like JR, guys like Korver. And it's how do you kind of balance from a roster perspective keeping those guys involved? Because I'm, you know, like Tristan Thompson's not going to be a positive influence if he's sitting on the bench. Like, this guy is 27. He's going to want to play.
Yeah.
Guys like Korver and JR are going to want to play. But all of a sudden, it's like, are you planning on David Nwaba being in your rotation? Are you planning on Rodney Hood and Jordan Clarkson being in your rotation? Because all these guys, all of a sudden, the Cavs have probably 13 guys who expect to play.
Yeah. And that probably deserve minutes. Like, none that, there's not a lot that you say, okay, this guy deserves 36 minutes as a starter on an NBA roster. But you have a lot of guys that
are, deserve 15 to 20.
Yeah, that deserve real minutes. Like, even Jordan Clarkson, who we've shit on fairly consistently, that's still a guy that last season, I think his playoffs get in the way of us remembering just what he was, but he is still 13 points per game, shot almost 46% from the floor and 41% from three. Like, he's not going to give you playmaking, but that's a reliable scoring option on a team that doesn't have a lot of that. And we've seen him be an effective scorer on bad teams before it. And I don't think this is going to be anywhere near the worst team he's ever played on. So he's going to be a guy that's deserving of minutes. And I think when you look up and down the roster, the one name of a guy that probably expects minutes and just does not fit in these plans whatsoever is J.R. Smith.
Yeah, J.R. is kind of a problem in a lot of ways. Like, he was on the championship team. He has that natural cachet. I think just about anyone would agree that he has slacked significantly since getting his big deal. Mm-hmm. They need to play guys like Rodney Hood. Jordan Clarkson's going to need to play the two. George Hill's going to need to play the two. David Nwaba's going to need to play the two. And then, you know, it's not like you can really shift JR up and down too much. Like, JR is either going to play the two or the three. And he's a pretty small three, to be honest. So, given his lack of positional versatility, it's like, it's really kind of hard to find out where he's going to get minutes. But also, like, he will burn this motherfucker down if you try to bench him.
That would be the guy that I'd worry about in the locker room in this situation. And the two candidates for guys that you'd kind of expect them to try to move before the season would be JR and Korver. But you don't really see deals this.
Doesn't Korver feel like a midseason trade guy?
Korver midseason, but I just thought there was going to be interest before the season. Like, I think Korver is almost going to get traded around the same time of year as he was with Atlanta, which is around December, like a good 2 months before the deadline. Some team's going to say, hey, we need shooting, and the sooner we get this guy integrated into the lineup, the better. Like, I don't think you have to wait to see if this is the best offer. I think that's a guy that you're just always, there's always going to be a need for him, especially with that non-guaranteed deal. JR, I think the Cavs have to be proactive here. Like, even if it was something where you're really not getting much value in return, like, let's say you're trading him to Milwaukee for Delly, and you just get a trade exception for the gap in their contracts. Like, that, they're capable of eating that salary. That would be a better situation for him. And although the Cavs don't necessarily need another guard, I think Delly is someone that is probably going to be okay with not getting minutes, or at least handle that a little bit better than JR would.
Yeah, you know, it's weird because the Cavs are so heavy at point guard, shooting guard, and then they have they have three point guards that need to play in Clarkson, Hill, and Sexton.
Right.
They have three shooting guards that need to play in JR, Hood, and Korver.
Mm-hmm.
They have three centers that all will expect to play, and include it, and then a fourth in Channing Frye, who, you know, I think could earn some minutes just given like how big the Cavs are, that he might need to play some stretch five and let the other guy shift, whoever's playing center, shift down, whether it's Tristan or Nance. So you have Tristan, Nance, and then Zizic, who, you know, like, looked really good in summer league, and like, you have to find out what you have in him.
He needs developmental minutes at the very least.
Yeah. So then at the four, at the three, they have just Jetty, really.
Yeah.
And probably Rodney Hood should play some minutes there, even though he's not really bulky enough.
Mm-hmm. Korver probably will while he's still here.
And in the small ball era, that's not as big of a problem. Like, if threes are fours now, then twos are often threes. So you can survive with Hood at the three.
And you've listed all of these issues. You've listed all these issues without mentioning Nwaba, who's going to earn minutes with how hard
Nwaba,
he plays defensively.
Nwaba, I'm sorry, is going to need to play the two and the three. I imagine he'll play most of his minutes at the three, actually, because he's got that 7-foot wingspan.
Yeah, and he's built like a Mack truck.
Yeah, but then the four, it's just Love and Sam Decker. You don't want to play Sam Decker there, so that's why I think you're going to see Fry. Maybe getting some minutes ahead of Zizic, who deserves them more, just because you need that flex.
So much of this would be solved if Larry Nance, and I don't think this is going to happen, this is probably like the consistent joke with his career, but you would hope that he can add an outside shot, because if he's capable of playing some power forward, that opens up the rotation a fair bit. Like, I think
you would hope that.
Yeah, like, I think in an ideal world, you'd sell both Tristan and Nance on playing about 22 minutes per game at the center position. You give like six of those minutes to Zizic alone at center with either Love, Fry, or whoever it may be. And then for like another four of those minutes, maybe Larry Nance plays alongside Zizic with other shooters. So I think if you could get Zizic like 8 to 10 minutes a game, that would be great. Maybe you rest Tristan on back-to-backs in an effort to keep him healthy. But you'd really need both Tristan and Nance, as long as they're both on this roster, to kind of buy into like a two-pronged attack where, hey, you are both energy guys. You both dealt with injuries last year. Tristan more so than Nance, but Nance had that hamstring issue. So if you can get them to buy into, you're going to play 22 productive minutes each, and you're just going to go out there and play as hard as possible, maybe that's something that they can buy into.
I'll tell you this much, Justin. If they play Nance and Zizic together a lot of minutes, they're going to be learning a lot of lessons, if you know what I'm saying.
Hey, so you're not buying into the Zizic corner three?
Not so much. And honestly, I want Zizic in the post. Like, that's where I want him to develop, you know? Like, I want to figure out if he can score down there first and then expand his game, you know?
I think it's possible that those minutes could not be a tire fire, but they're definitely far from ideal.
This roster's far from ideal. It's got a LeBron James-sized hole in it right now.
Again, pessimism with Jetty Osman, but that's okay. But actually, let's talk a little bit about Jetty and just the light and the life that is in him at Media Day.
Oh my God. Swoon. No one has made me just experience such pure joy. Like, the way he talks, I forget who tweeted it. I want to say it was Scott from Waiting for Next Year. So he was talking about, if you didn't watch Media Day or listen to Media Day, Jetty was asked about the workout Instagram that was taken where he was working out with LeBron, KD, and Kawhi. And Jetty basically explained that LeBron had hit him up about a workout. They worked out. The next day, he's like, all right, next tomorrow, KD and Kawhi are coming. And Jetty was like, oh my God, and was like losing his mind. And like the way he was talking about it, I think Scott from Waiting for Next Year said something like, it was like he had won a sweepstakes. like he won this prize and hadn't just earned it by being a good guy and a good athlete and a good prospect. His genuine joy for the game is just really, really cool. I think we saw it all year with his reactions on the bench, and his general activity when he's playing. He did kind of downplay the Korver teaching him how to shoot thing. I think he mostly was like, yeah, I've been working on my jumper since I got to the Cavs.
Yeah.
And it's getting better.
And, I don't know, how much of the World Cup qualifiers did you watch?
I did not watch a ton. I know you watched a little bit more.
Yeah, so Jetty hit just a ton of threes. Out of the top 30 scorers in World Cup qualifying, Jetty hit the most threes per game. I think shot at like 46% clip. like the shot looked a lot better. And what was surprising to me is almost all of his shots were coming off the dribble or off step backs. Like, it'd be one thing for him to be set up on these catch and shoot shots. But his release is just so much more consistent. The base can kind of shift a little bit at times, I notice, which could be a bit of a product of kind of those step back shots, but it's just so much more consistent. He seems to have so much more confidence. And as much as we like to temper our expectations, kind of joke for the moon with Jetty and have more realistic expectations, I really don't know what exactly he could be this year. Like, especially given the players that are around him, like I think playing off Kevin Love and off a guy like Sexton, who's going to draw so much attention with just kind of his playing style. Yeah, I think he could have a real surprising year this year.
I'll tell you what, based on his fit with Sexton, as you mentioned, I think the Cavs' success this upcoming season, will, offensively at least, will really be tied to transition points per possession.
Oh, for sure.
And transition frequency. I think this team needs to effing fly.
That's one thing I'm really excited for. Like, I think this team, because Tyronn Lue has always wanted them to play fast, which is just difficult. Like, the Cavs with LeBron, you're going to get out and run off of stops or steals. But other than that, LeBron likes to walk the ball up. He likes to survey the court. And, I mean, can't really blame him. You get a very
and
you get a good.
His offenses are always really, really good, but you can't really do that without him. Oh, I'd like to note something really quick.
Yes.
Luke Walton said he wanted to play fast today, and that's kind of. I tweeted all of LeBron's team's pace for the last like 8-9 years, and 12. They were 12th last year, and that's the fastest he's ever been by a lot.
Yeah.
And someone just tweeted at me and said, I don't get why you don't why you guys don't understand. LeBron clearly understands now what he's been doing doesn't work. He's changing it up. How can you look at LeBron's team's offenses over his 15-year career and think, yeah, it's just not working?
Yeah, I think the problem with LeBron, the reason he only has 3 rings, is that those offenses just haven't been good enough.
Yeah, just, you know, he probably would have made 15 finals in a row if he just played as fast as Luke Walton wants him to play the whole time.
Yeah, what he needed all this time was guys that can't shoot and an increased pace. But yeah, I mean, yes.
Back to the Cavs. Sorry, I just wanted to note that because I love it when people say shit like that. Like LeBron just had an epiphany and realized his entire career has been a waste up till now. but to the Cavs, you know, like, I really do think they got to run. I think you look at guys like Nance, who's a very good transition player.
Yeah.
Clarkson, very good transition player. Jetty should be a very good transition player. Korver's one of the best trailers in the league. Love is one of the best trailers in the league and one of the best outlet passers in the league.
Yep. Sexton should be a very good transition player because he goes at about 110 miles an hour every time he has the ball.
I think we're going to see a lot of ugly offense out of the Cavs this year. In the half court. And I think what we're going to see is that this team is really going to rely on being able to run to get easy buckets, because otherwise they're just going to be kind of few and far in between. Unless, you know, the Kevin Love rebuilt renaissance is very legit and Jetty's three is very legit. Because right now there's just a bunch of, like, there's some shot creation holes on the roster. You know, Sexton can create off the bounce. Hill kind of can. Love can kind of operate as a hub. But there's not a lot of off-the-bounce juice on this team right now.
They're going to need Hood and Clarkson. They're going to need Hood and Clarkson to perform in those situations for sure.
Yeah, which is why I think they're just going to really need to lean on their full court transition game, because otherwise I just think they're going to be playing with fire. You know, I think this is a team that's going to be prone to bog down when the opposing team has taken away what they want to do. But I really think they can do that. I think Jetty has the potential to be one of the better transition players in the league. you know, because he's a nice finisher and is so freaking recklessly aggressive running in transition. Like, he sprints harder on a fast break. He earns his passes on those fast breaks, you know. And I think he's going to be a lot more emboldened. So, yeah, that feels like the pathway to a good offense for this team.
Yeah, yeah. And what I was going to add there is just Jetty also keeps his head up. Like, he's not Derrick Rose reckless in transition where he's just, I got the ball, I'm going to the rim. You see him give up the ball in transition, but then continue to just book it and try to be there for a trailer if the ball comes off the rim, or be there for kind of a dump off pass if the defender shifts over to him on a 2-on-1. So I do think that transition is going to be a big part of this team. And I mean, if you're talking about a team that's playing hard, that plays fast, that isn't good, but kind of plays with that kind of an identity, and if, let's say, the rotation gets cleared up a little bit and you have David Nwaba playing a little more, getting some consistent minutes, and you get some of those veterans that aren't as enthused with the regular season out of the lineup, I think you have the chance to kind of build a team with more of a defensive identity than they've had in the past that plays fast. And I think that's something that people can get behind, even if the wins aren't necessarily there yet and you're getting more lessons than wins.
Can we not say the word loss for the remainder of the season?
I think I like that. I think that we're just going
to
keep it
like the Cavs took a hard 94-83 lesson against the Grizzlies on Tuesday night.
Holy fuck, did the Cavs get a lesson from the Warriors yesterday? No, I'm all in on this.
What an embarrassing quote. Oh, man.
I love it.
Like, there's no greater dog whistle to like, oh, this is going to suck, huh?
What is your craziest prediction for the Cavs this season that you feel like has the possibility of coming true?
Jetty wins most improved player.
So I think Jetty winning most improved player, I think, is very possible, especially if he gets his scoring average up to like 14 points per game, because people are going to be looking for narrative reasons to kind of crown the Cavs with some feel-good story, and I think Jetty's a great candidate for that. I think my most outlandish one would be Tyronn Lue winning Coach of the Year if this team somehow like gets the 5 seed. I think that he'd be in the discussion there, especially with all the dysfunction that's inevitably going to happen with the Celtics. I think there's a real opening there.
Yeah, I kind of don't, but that's okay.
I just think there is
a narrative. There is a narrative. Reason. I don't think you're wrong there. Like, from the perspective of like, listen, this is a guy that no one really respects all of a sudden because the Cavs couldn't beat Kevin Durant. But you know, I do think that if they look really good, I think it'll almost be more aesthetic. Like, if the Cavs like look good, even if their results, you know, like, I guess like if they played like the Nuggets the last couple of years where it's like, maybe they're not winning just as much as we want, but there's something, they're clearly ramping up towards something positive. And they're obviously a good team now. But
that would make me feel so good. That would be such a moral victory. And that's really what this year is likely going to be.
Yeah, a lot of lessons.
Yeah, a lot of lessons and moral victories.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think that there is the reason I lean towards the Jetty one is like, because if the Cavs do make the playoffs, he has to be really, really good. Like, a lot better than any non-Cavs fan thinks he's going to be.
Right. He has to be a legitimately good starter. And
I don't really see a roadmap for the Cavs making the playoffs if Jetty is just okay and Colin Sexton is just okay. Is that fair?
So, yeah, I think the only roadmap would be if, like, Jetty is decent. Sexton is like Rookie of the Year, which I don't think would be an outlandish prediction just because of the
volume. Yeah, like one of them has to be pretty freaking good. But the idea.
Yeah, you'd also need like Rodney Hood to be a consistent like 18, 19 point per game guy, and Jordan Clarkson a step up. Like, you need a whole lot of different factors. If you had to guess on how the scoring breakdown is going to kind of shake out for the Cavs, like, I'm not asking you to put numbers on it because that just gets complicated. But if you had to rank the top five scorers, what your prediction is going to be for the top five in points per game this season, what do you think it's going to be?
Oh, man, this is really hard, actually.
Yeah, I know, right?
He's going to be the leading scorer, but I don't think he's going to average that many more points, to be honest. I don't know if he's ever a 26 points a game guy ever again. I think he'll probably be settling around like 21, 22. I would say Love. Whew, then it gets like Love, then Sexton. I think those two I'm like pretty confident in because I think they're going to lead the team in shots. Then three gets pretty messy. I think from there on, it's sort of a grab bag. I think Jetty should be in the mix there. I think George Hill ought to be in the mix there, but he might not be, and he probably won't finish the season on the team if it plays out the way I see it. I actually think Jordan Clarkson and Rodney Hood are actually probably three or four. Hood, Clarkson, and Jetty, I think, in some order, go three, four, and five on this team. Just because I don't think JR is going to get a ton of minutes. I think they're going to start phasing him out. And then.
Plus, he just might not play enough games. Like if he gets traded.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I would tend to go that way. I mean, I think Korver could definitely sneak in. I think Korver is actually going to be sneaky, really important for this team because they don't have a ton of shooting all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Between Clarkson and Sexton. And, you know, you'd lose LeBron, who actually was a pretty good shooter for them this year. Jetty's jumper, you know, we'll see if that holds up, but I think JR is going to play less. And if they're going to be playing a lot of two big lineups, you actually kind of need Korver out there because he's one of the few guys who, you know, you can play a two-man game with a big and not have it kill you.
Right.
If it's him doing that screen dance that he kind of developed over time. So, yeah, that's kind of the way I see it. Do you agree with that general layout?
I think so. I was running to take care of my dog, so I missed number two. I'm going to assume you said Sexton.
Yeah, Love, Sexton, and then in some order, Hood, Clarkson, Jetty.
I think it's going to shake out to be Love, Hood, Sexton, Clarkson, then Jetty. In general, I agree. I just think Rodney Hood is going to have to play a bigger role. And I think Sexton is going to try to be a bit more of a facilitator, at least early in the season, before probably shifting as the year ends. I think he's probably going to finish strong after like a little bit of a lull midseason. But I just think Hood is going to need to play a consistent role. I think George Hill is going to start next to Sexton, but he's probably going to be the first sub out. I think you take him out for Hood, and Hood almost plays starters minutes. But again, all these rotations I've imagined, I almost never have a role in mind for J.R. Smith, and I just don't know how that ends up impacting things.
Hey, I have a question. Are we sure Jetty starts?
I'm not positive. I have a
strong... I think we all want him to. But I think they might start Hood there.
I think it's possible. I think it's very, very, very possible. It all depends what he's most comfortable with. I think there's actually a world where starting Hood there makes a little more sense, as much as I want Jetty to start. Just because I think a second unit where you have Hood who wants to initiate the offense, Jordan Clarkson who's going to initiate offense anytime he's touching the ball, no matter what you have to say about it, and Kyle Korver and whoever the front court players are, I think that probably gets a little more problematic, and having a glue guy like Jetty can significantly benefit those lineups.
Counterpoint, I don't give a fuck about the bench. We're not winning the championship this year. I actually think it would be actively harmful to the team if they started Rodney Hood. I asked the question so I could answer it.
Okay. Well, that's...
Because I genuinely think there's no world in which this should happen. I don't care about how the bench unit flows when I'm trying to figure out if I've got a nice role player in Jetty Osman or someone I can actually consider a core piece of my team.
What if it's Sexton, Hood, and Jetty?
That's fine, but don't put Jetty on the bench. I think... If there's three people I need to fucking know about by the end of this season, it's Kevin Love as a lead dog, it's Colin Sexton, and it's Jetty Osman.
I'm with that.
Like, everything else is secondary to those three goals. I need to know what this guy, that trio, and where it can take me. Like,
so in short, nobody puts Jetty in a corner.
Nobody puts Jetty in a corner or on the bench for a guy who didn't come off the bench in a playoff game.
Oh boy. I think I'm with you there. I think maybe at some point Hood is going to start at the two, especially if they end up moving George Hill, who's another one of those mid-season trade candidates. They just really need to thin the herd. Like, there really shouldn't be this many mouths to feed. They have to figure out.
Yeah, they got to trade some vets. That's just all it is. And I don't know when that's going to happen. But there's going to be some mighty unhappy people in the locker room if the roster stays as currently constituted. And that's going to be a real challenge.
It certainly is. But we're going to get a lot of answers fairly soon. You look at the schedule. This pod's going to be dropped on Tuesday, and a week later, Cavs-Celtics. It's not exactly regular season basketball, but it's basketball. Like, we're going to see this team in action, which I don't know about you, but I'm pretty excited for. I just think there's so many changes. There's so many changes that need to happen this year, and there's so many unknowns that it's more exciting and it's more tantalizing to me than at least last year, where you're like, okay, we're clearly playing for second place, and hopefully we get that. Hopefully we get another finals appearance.
Yeah, I mean, expectations are everything, right? And really all I think this fan base is going to do, including us, is ask the Cavs to perform to or beyond our expectations, which are considerably lower. I think a lot of people didn't have fun last year because they had higher expectations than what the Cavs were ultimately able to deliver.
Yes.
And I don't even think that fans were wrong for not having fun, but that's fundamentally what happened. So, you know, just getting to exceed expectations for a bit, that's actually something we haven't gotten to do as fans for a long time. You know, the last time we got to feel that way was when LeBron single-handedly beat Detroit in game 5.
Yeah.
All the way back then.
Which, you know, permanently skewed my ability to be too rational about what is possible with him.
Yep. But that was the last time they got to be like, whoa, they're doing this? Because, you know, from then on, finals were the expectation. Anything other than that was a crushing disappointment. Then he left, and they just sucked ass every year and, like, never outperformed expectations. And then he came back, and the second he comes back, it's championship or bust, or at least finals or bust. And so, like, getting to be the team on the rise is actually a really fun phenomenon. And the one, you know, I always joke that the best time in a sports fan's life, other than winning the title, is the year you outperform expectations, the year your team takes the leap, because you're just so thrilled to even be here. The next year is always miserable. Remember the first Lob City year, how fun that was?
Yeah.
And how miserable the Clippers became.
We have the possibility to exceed expectations, and that's fun. And even if we don't, I don't think this team's necessarily in a terrible position. So to kind of wrap things up, it's a good position to be in. I'm very excited for this season. For our listeners, I want you to also keep your expectations low with us so that you're capable of having a good time. But I know I speak for Carter and myself when I say that we're really excited to be back. We're really excited for basketball to be back. Media Day is an exciting day. You don't really get anything of substance, but it's that little reminder that basketball is coming back. I want to thank again Blue Wire. We couldn't be more excited than to be partnering up with them. We're very impressed with everything so far, and we're excited for what the future holds. Again, if you want to support the podcast, we no longer have the Patreon running, but you can still support us the old school way by leaving a rating, leaving a review, telling your friends and family about the podcast. don't build it up too much, but let them know, because word of mouth is one of the best ways to help this spread.
If I can jump in real quick before you finish wrapping us up, I just wanted to make a quick note. Now that we kind of have put our Patreon on hold, now that we're being supported without the funding of our very dedicated listener base, I just think we'd be remiss, you know, as the Patreon era of the Chase Down podcast ends. It wasn't a very long one, but it was a really meaningful one to me and Justin. We were just so excited that we thought if we topped $50, we would be like, whoa, that's crazy. You know, anyone would support us that way. And I think at one point we were getting 130 a month, from like up to, I think, like 30 patrons at one point.
Yeah.
That was like unbelievable. And, you know, we had this Discord chat that we kind of created just for our patrons, and everyone kind of went through it one day and just talked about all the why they love the pod and what it meant to them. And like, I was nearly like in tears. I was just like so geeked. So I just wanted to give our patrons a really special shout out, because you absolutely didn't need to support us, and you did. And like, there's just no kinder thing you could say. So we just really appreciate the shit out of you guys.
Absolutely. And we're going to continue to look at different ways to engage the community and continue building on what we kind of started there. And, we have ideas for Discord chat, and, we'll, be rolling those out as time progresses here. But, we're back to recording on a consistent schedule, so you'll be hearing more of our annoying voices moving forward. So thanks again to all of our listeners. A special shout out to all our patrons for helping us out, and shout out to Blue Wire as well. We will be back with more coverage, more emergency podcasts, maybe a Jimmy Butler trade, who knows.
Who's
to say? But thanks from me and Carter, and until next time, go Cavs.